I'm Brett Rutherford, and this is the Front Row Network. Hello out there in podcast land. I'm Brett, a contributor to the Front Row Network, and I'm also co-host for Beyond the Mouse podcast, the All Things Disney part of the Front Row Network. So, Downton Abbey, the movie, opened with a $31 million box office weekend, beating Fox and Brad Pitt's Ad Astra, and Lionsgate and Sylvester Stallone's Rambo Last Blood. Can you imagine? Well, in a word, yes. And as the Brits say, well done. Besides, in a battle of wits or otherwise, my money would be on Dame Maggie Smith's Dowager Countess over Rambo any day. But I'm getting ahead of myself. But Downton Abbey? Really? Quoting from Jen Chaney's Vulture article, following the end of the show's six-season run, Why Downton Abbey Became a Massive Cultural Phenomenon, its storylines were not edgy, or zeitgeisty, or ripped from the headlines, unless you've been reading websites where Woman's Maid Attempts to Make Soup for the First Time counts as breaking news. This is a show with masterpiece connections, a preponderance of lords and ladies, and a fixation on under-butler protocol. It starred a whole lot of very white people, none of whom could utter the word diaphragm, but who frequently and enthusiastically used the term golly. It aired on PBS, for heaven's sake, long considered a stuffy old classics professor of the TV networks. Yet it became a phenomenon, one too popular, acclaimed, and firmly entrenched in our popular culture to ignore. Downton Abbey is not just the most watched series in PBS's 45-year history, it was a widely watched series by any measure. Downton Abbey, the series, was nominated for 59 Primetime Emmy Awards and won 12. Other accolades include Screen Actors Guild's SAG Awards for Outstanding Performance by an Ensemble in a Drama Series, and a profusion of other awards including the UK's National Television Awards Most Popular Drama, and the list goes on. Now, I didn't watch DA, Downton Abbey, at the start. You might say that I was a little late to the party. I mean, when I heard everyone talking about Downton Abbey in the first and second seasons, I thought to myself, really? Can anything be that good? Well, on a rather rainy summer Saturday, I was about to find out. I was scrolling through Netflix programming options and came across Downton Abbey seasons 1 and 2. After a rather heavy sigh and a slight rolling of the eyes, around 1 p.m. that Saturday, I began with series 1 and, by 4 a.m. Sunday morning, the next day, I had experienced both seasons 1 and 2, as well as my first binge watch. As Matthew, spoiler alert, Crawley knelt down on one knee to propose to Lady Mary, spoiler alert, she said yes, and the snow slowly started drifting down over Downton Abbey, I thought, well done. And I was hooked for a total of 6 seasons. So as you might have come to understand, I am in fact a huge Downton Abbey fan. The series, and now Downton Abbey, the movie. Speaking of Downton Abbey, the movie, thank you for your patience, I sometimes go on. It was delightful. This has been Brett for the Front Row. Okay, just a little more. And no spoilers, well, maybe a couple, but if you are a Downton Abbey fan, you simply must see this film. But I haven't seen Downton Abbey, you question. Well, my friend, it is time to get with the program, spelled with 2 M's and an E on the end. Binge away and come back when you've finished. So, the film begins in 1927 by following the journey of a letter from Buckingham Palace to... Oops, that's right, limited spoilers. Well then, how about some questions? How will everyone, upstairs and down, possibly prepare for the royal visit in such a short amount of time? Can Mr. Barrow, the butler, hold a candle to his immediate predecessor, the now-retired and carrot-tending gardener? Oops. Mr. Carson? Will Barrow at least get the silver polished on time? Or will Lady Mary call on Carson in her time of need? Oops, again. How about the Dowager Countess of Grantham, Violet Crowley, and her foil, the ever-so-charming, in a down-to-earth way, Isabel Crowley, now Merton? Can we count on the Countess to be present with her wit, witticisms, pronouncements, and her always pithy, precise put-downs? Here in America, Burger King says, have it your way. But in 1927, when the royal staff arrives at Downton Abbey, will they insist on having it their way? How will Mrs. Hughes, Mrs. Patmore, Daisy, Anna, and everyone downstairs just let the royal staff take over? And what about Mr. Wilson, the king's butler? I mean, the royal page of the downstairs. Is that dinner I smell, or Anna's plot to preserve the reputation of Downton? Go, Anna. And what about love? L'amour, l'amour, always l'amour. I'm sure you know, but that's a quote from 1939's The Women. And a quick plug for the Front Row Network's Brandon Davis's Classics podcast, where you can listen to him and his guests take on this and other classic films. End promo. And what about love? At the end of the television series, all of the Downton Abbey couples seem to have their happy endings, but it's 2 years later, and are they still happy? Are there new opportunities for love and companionship for Tom Branson, Daisy and Andy, and maybe even for Mr. Barrow? The answer to these questions and to other Downton Abbey characters' machinations are in the extremely capable and brilliant hands of creator, writer, and executive producer Julian Fellowes. How is it even possible to keep all of these stories and plot lines together in a coherent and interesting manner? It's like Lord Fellowes' plots are spinning plates where he has the unenviable task of keeping everything Downton twirling and entertaining, and while hosting royalty. He does this, as the English do, with grace and ease, at least to the audience's view. The look of Downton Abbey, the movie, is even more luxe than the series. I mean, it takes place at castles. But this time, thanks to movie-making budgets, Highclere Castle, the real-life setting for Downton Abbey, appears even more stately and grand, thanks to a number of exterior aerial shots, both day and night perspectives, and to the glorious detailed interior views that the size and scope movie theater screens allow. Each character's looks, costumes, manners, and, well, everything DA fans have come to expect have made the transfer to the big screen worth the wait. I first saw the film on the Thursday preview night before Friday's opening. Like the other must-see superhero blockbuster films I've watched this summer, I wanted to make sure I arrived early enough to secure a good seat. So I arrived an hour and a half before the first showing. Well, it became clear that the Marvel opening nights and Downton Abbey opening nights are a little different. Their audiences are, no doubt, equally loyal to each respective franchise. Mind you, the theater was sold out. But what was a wonderful throwback to times past, at the end of Downton Abbey the movie, the audience applauded. This audience appreciation activity happened again when I saw the movie the second time. I believe it bodes well for Downton Abbey's staying power that the theater was very full on a Wednesday early afternoon showing. But wait, I have more questions. Well, those will have to wait for another time. As I'm always the optimist, I'm sure we'll have at least one more opportunity for a return visit to Downton Abbey in the near future. As I said earlier, well done. For the Front Row Network, I'm Brett Rutherford, and thank you for joining me as we return to Downton Abbey. So until next time, we'll see you in the front row.
This episode is a production of the Front Row Network, a proud Community Voices member of National Public Radio, Illinois. For more information and to see the full slate of Front Row Network shows, you can visit frnpod.com or nprillinois.org. You can also find and follow us on social media by searching for the Front Row Network on Facebook and Instagram, and Front Row Reviews with a Z on Twitter.